Oh, no, there are more. Okay, so this is our second senior division national nationwide call, and we have them in the spring. And I do not have one scheduled. I don't have a date yet scheduled for April, and we're working on that. People's schedules are tending to change fairly rapidly the last few days.
I don't know why. They don't have one. Anywhere to go.
Yeah, well, but sometimes they're not available. You know, they don't know what other
work dates
they might have. I mean, they're home, but they may not, yeah, you know. This call is, I want to say also, our last call was about our senior retreat, and we are having it. We will have our retreat this fall. It will be at Rocky Bottom, October 18th through the 24th. If you or know people who are interested, they should contact me, Ruth Sager, at rsager78@gmail.com, and I will send them a flyer and an application. They would fill out the application and send it back to me. They can do that via email as well, and we'll go from there. Let's see if there's any other announcements. I think that's the only one that I need specifically right now. So,
Yolanda?
Okay, good. Do you have something to say, Yolanda, or just introducing yourself?
Yes, I wanted to ask a question. To the Senior Division. Can you tell me where Rocky Bottom is?
Oh, yes. Sure, we can. Shelley, do you want to do that since you're our South Carolinian here?
Sure. I'm Shelley Cobble, and I'm one of the ones that both goes to Rocky Bottom and works up there with various senior groups. It is in the northwest corner of Pickens County in South Carolina, which kind of puts it at the foot of Sassafras Mountain, which is our highest mountain in South Carolina, about 3,700-foot elevation. And it's not all that far from North Carolina. We're about an hour and a half from Asheville and about 20 minutes from Brevard, North Carolina, if you've ever heard of that. It's a very beautiful camp. It's right, there's mountains all around. There's streams and creeks that run just full force through the camp, and it's just a very picturesque place. It's real pretty, and the nearest airport would be in Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina. It's kind of a airport that sits between two towns, and that's about an hour away from Rocky Bottom. So what we do is have you fly into that point, and then we recruit people who drive the campers from the airport up to Rocky Bottom and back, and that's really at no charge to you. It's a Lions Club group that does that. So that's a little bit about where it is.
Okay, thank you.
Is that helpful, Yolanda? Okay, good. I was interested in Stacy because she has a blog, which is called Blind Traveler, which is a little bit ironic at the moment since nobody can really travel. but when we can, you know, that there'll be things that we might want to look on that blog and know about it. And I thought it'd be interesting for her to tell us about how she started it and what she's doing. She also works at the American Foundation for the Blind and wants to share with us some of the research and so forth that they're doing. So, Stacy, if you want to take it away, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really excited to talk to you about both AFB and the Blind Travelers Network website. I thought I would start with the initiatives that we have concerning older adults with vision loss at AFB, if that works for you. And then after that, we'll move on to the website. Does that sound good?
Very good.
Okay, hearing
that's
no objection.
That's fine, yeah.
Okay, so most of you are probably aware of the American Foundation for the Blind. We've been around since 1921. We've done a variety of functions, from producing books on tape, books in Braille, aids and appliances for people who are blind, professional development materials for people who are working in the field of blindness. But as of about the past 3 years, we've done a sort of shift in our strategy and in our mission as an organization. And right now we are primarily kind of a think tank. We really mainly do research and policy. So we try to do research into areas of blindness and vision loss that other people may never have done. And the purpose of doing this is to inform our own public policy so that when we try to advocate for laws and we try to advocate for new regulations, it's informed by the research that we do. And we go on Capitol Hill and we talk to members of the House and members of the Senate. They, you know, often want proof. We tell them things and they want to know numbers. They want hard data. And often this data isn't available. So with AFB, we want to conduct these studies to get this information. And then we also want to disseminate it to, you know, organizations like yourself, and then also use it in creating our own outreach and advocacy. So our five main areas that we work on are education, employment, older adults with vision loss, transportation, and technology. So today, I'm primarily going to talk about our aging initiative that we call older adults with vision loss. So within that, we're primarily, when it comes to the aging population, we're primarily focusing on transportation and employment, because those are areas that a lot of people who are working with older adults aren't currently focusing on. So to talk to you a little bit about the projects that we're doing in the aging area, the first one is called Project Visitor. And we were given a grant by the Volkswagen Foundation to do a study on what transportation options are available to older adults with vision loss. And we're focusing on five main areas: urban, suburban, exurban, rural, and remote. And we're trying to learn what transportation options are available for older adults, and are these adequate? Are these meeting their needs? Are these allowing them to be independent in their homes and communities and participate fully in life? So the way we did this was, during the first year, we put out a number of online surveys that were filled out by professionals who work with, you know, older individuals who are blind. And the second year, we have conducted telephone interviews with 81 blind seniors themselves. And again, the primary mission is to get as complete a picture as we can of the transportation situation for older people in the United States. And so we're currently in the final stages of our second year, and we look forward to working with Volkswagen to publish this information, to get it published in other other journals. And we hope that this will help us when we advocate on Capitol Hill to be able to show them with numbers that the kind of transportation that's available to older people with vision loss is not is not adequate. It doesn't meet the needs that people have. So first of all, is there any question on that? Otherwise I'll move on.
What's the difference between rural and remote?
Remote? I think, you know, there is a population difference. I'm not being in our research department, I'm not sure how they distinguish between rural and remote.
Okay.
I think it has to do with how far away the nearest town of over 1,000 people is.
Okay, I'm just curious.
And I think it can also be, it's used by the U.S., I mean, it's an officially kind of recognized
right, standard. Recognized.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was a third kind that you mentioned. It wasn't suburban and it wasn't
it was
urban.
Something. Exurban.
Exurban. Mm-hmm.
Exurban.
What's that? A way to think of exurban is like the outer tier of suburbs. The most remote suburbs, I guess, is the best way to describe it. So they're not quite rural, but they're not quite suburban. And again, there is an official, U.S. Census Bureau definition for these things, which the survey is aligning to. And so we look forward to having that information and presenting that, what we've learned. But that's, you know, something we're really excited about. I'm looking forward to scheduling meetings on Capitol Hill and letting members of Congress know about the results of the survey so that they can use it when they are, you know, making policy around transportation. So the next thing we're working on is some paratransit advocacy. As you guys are probably aware, well, an interesting statistic is that actually 86% of older Americans are more afraid of entering a nursing home than they are of dying, because people don't want to lose their autonomy. They don't want to lose their privacy. They don't want to lose, you know, their ability to make their own decisions. And yet, vision loss remains one of the number one or the primary reason that people enter nursing homes. And when you ask people, hey, you know, you have vision loss, why did you enter a nursing home? It's often, well, I couldn't get around the way I used to, or, you know, mom couldn't get around the way she used to. So people are entering medical facilities, nursing homes, simply because they can't get to the grocery store. And, you know, as we're aware, this is a huge problem. And one thing we often hear from seniors is that when they use paratransit to, let's say, go to the post office or go to the drugstore, most paratransit agencies don't allow you to schedule a return trip or a ride to another destination within 90 minutes of when you were dropped off. So if you're dropped off at 3 o'clock, many paratransit agencies won't allow you to schedule a ride home or schedule a ride onto another destination until 4:30. So we hear from a lot of older adults that they're stuck standing at the post office or standing at the drugstore with, you know, for an hour and a half, often with nowhere to sit, sometimes outside. And then we also hear a lot from blind parents that, you know, I used to be the chairperson of the NFB Blind Parents Group, and I would hear probably about, once or twice a week, I would get calls from blind parents who would say, I want to work. I live in poverty. I never thought I'd live in poverty. I went to college. I got a degree, and now I live on SSI because I have no way of dropping my kids off at childcare and then going on to work because, you know, often taking the bus to drop your kids off at childcare and then go on to work just simply doesn't work. Again, the federal regulations don't require paratransit agencies to, you know, take a trip onto a final destination before 90 minutes. So you have a lot of parents who can't use Uber, and they can't afford to use Uber and Lyft because it's cost prohibitive. I think about my husband and I, you know, our youngest daughter, before the coronavirus, her preschool opens at 7:30, and my husband needs to be to work at 8 a.m. So there's only a half hour in between when we can drop Josephine off and when Greg needs to be at work. And so, you know, that's not enough time to drop her off, sign her in, walk to the bus stop, take the bus, walk to work. And yet, paratransit also would not work because Greg can't just hang out at Josephine's preschool from 7:30 to 9. He has to be at work at 8, and, you know, he doesn't want to be the weird dad just hanging out in the parking lot. And so a lot of parents that we talk to, they say literally they do not have a way of dropping their kids off at school or at preschool and then going on to work. So one thing that we wanted, and interestingly, in both the comprehensive statewide needs assessments in California and Nebraska, blind and low vision people identify transportation as the number one barrier they face in finding and retaining employment. So we have worked with Congressman Jim Langevin, and actually this is very exciting. Our press release is coming out tomorrow, so you heard it here first. They are introducing the Disability Access to Transportation Act, and it has five main parts that deal with different aspects of transportation and disability. And the part that we got on there that we're really excited about is we would love to see paratransit agencies be required to make people make at least one stop of up to 10 minutes in duration so that a parent can take their child to preschool, so that a senior can mail a letter and then get back on, so that a senior can pick up a prescription from the drugstore and get back in. We think this will really help people in running errands and facilitating just normal activities of daily life. Now, we would like to get the paratransit regulations changed. However, right now, with our current administration, we're very concerned about opening regulations, because if we open them up, they may put in things that we don't want or take out things that we do want. But we decided right now the best course of action was to set up a pilot program where we can gather data on how this would work. So this pilot program will allow for grants to at least 15 municipalities, at least 15 cities or towns. Five of them need to be cities or towns with 200,000 people or more. Five of them will be towns with 200,000 people or less. And then at least five of them will be to rural communities. And the folks who apply for these grants will be required to allow people to make at least one stop on their paratransit ride, on their way to a final destination. It will also require them to gather data on how this affected their cost, how this affected employment in the area, how this affected customer satisfaction, how this affected the ride time of other people, whether they needed to buy more vehicles, to really give us a sense of what this would look like if we rolled it out nationally. And then those who participate in the program also have to, at the end, do a realistic assessment of whether they would be able to continue allowing this one stop after the grant program of 2 years had ended. So that will be, it was actually introduced on Friday, but Congressman Langevin then, right when they introduced it, they then got their first case of coronavirus in their district. So their media office has been really focused almost entirely on that. So we're really going to start doing media around the bill tomorrow. So we're very excited about that. So does anybody have any questions on that piece at all before we go forward?
I think that sounds excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So now the next thing is we are currently in the process of, we've been scheduling quarterly meetings to talk about transportation between AFB, NSB, and the American Council of the Blind. So we have the three largest national blindness organizations. And our goal is kind of threefold. The first goal is to kind of stay out of each other's lanes and to just be aware of what each other is doing so that we're not going after the same funders or we're not, trying to tap the same resources. And just so we know, also, if one person is doing something, then okay, that's being done. That's not something we need to be doing. So a big part of it is just like being aware of what each other is doing. The second thing is that we want to find areas of commonality that we might be able to support each other. For example, if someone's putting out a press release or if someone got a bill introduced, how can the rest of us signal boost or support if we're in agreement with that? So how can we kind of support what each other is doing? And then eventually down the road, we're hoping that eventually we can find some things where we can all pull together on, because we find that, transportation is in many ways the largest logistical barrier for most people who are blind. And, there's a lot of things that our organizations agree on. So we would really like to see, we've had our first two meetings, and again, we're doing this quarterly. And we would just, they're very informal. We just want to know how we can support each other and keep each other abreast of what we're doing. And then hopefully we can find some issues that we all want to, again, kind of pull together on. So that's a lot of our transportation stuff. Now, another thing that we're focusing on when it comes to older adults with vision loss is employment. Because what we have found is that no national employment programs that exist for people who are blind or that exist for people with cross disabilities focus. None of these employment programs really focus or target older workers who may have lost their vision, later in life, or who, just generally speaking, for any number of reasons, might be older and still wanting to work. Perhaps they retired from, career job, and now they want to continue working during their retirement and kind of have a part-time job or have like a passion job. So one thing that we did is my coworker and I, we did some environmental mapping of all the national employment programs for people who are blind or for cross disabilities that people who are blind could apply for. And we found, we kind of divided them up into 13 different areas, and then we identified the gaps in each area. And when it came to, programs that target older adults, I mean, there really is nothing. I mean, there's almost nothing. Most employment programs either target youth or at best, I mean, it's hard to find any employment programs that really target people above the age of 24 other than VR. And so if you are, a blind adult and you want to find employment, in most places, your state VR agency is your only option. And if you have a counselor who isn't that great, or you have your counselor is, overwhelmed, or the agency's underfunded, or any number of things, VR, I mean, that's all you have. You don't have the opportunity to look online, maybe find another program to apply to, because on a national level, that doesn't exist, particularly, again, if you're older. So we are really interested in finding out what the needs are, what the employment needs are of, blind seniors, and those who want to work. And certainly we think there's absolutely, nothing wrong with being retired, not trying to insinuate that everyone should work, but we find that this is something that no one is looking at. Like, there aren't really any other national organizations that are looking at employment from the perspective of older adults. So that's that. The other thing that really concerns us is that right now, VR services, as you're probably aware, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, WIOA, which passed in 2014 and then went into effect in 2017, it did away with the homemaker goal. So now if you are a client of vocational rehabilitation, you can't list homemaker as your goal and still receive comprehensive blindness training services. And while I personally definitely understand why the homemaker goal went away, I used to work for the California Department of Rehabilitation, and at one point, our blind field services had a 70% homemaker closure rate, which means that 70% of blind people whose cases were closed successfully were homemaker. And I know that 70% of blind people that walked into that door didn't want to be homemakers. We actually celebrated when it went down to 66%. We thought we were making a dent. So I agree more than anyone that homemaker was being used and abused. However, we do think that it did serve a useful purpose for some communities, including a lot of people who are older, because it allowed them to get mobility, get Braille, get adaptive technology, get daily living skills, and get them intensively. And even though they did not have a vocational goal. We know that there's the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, but as you know, that's basically a block grant program. So they give a certain amount of money to each state, and each state has a lot of flexibility in how they administer that program. So one state might say, okay, our state agency for the blind is going to administer this. Some states, like California, the rehab agency doesn't do it, but they contract out with other community agencies, such as like Society for the Blind, San Francisco Lighthouse. So, what kind of services an older person can get under OIB varies widely from state to state and even within states. Where my husband used to work at Society for the Blind, in my opinion, they have the most robust and comprehensive, program for blind seniors that I've seen in the country. I mean, it's one of their primary programs. I mean, they have monthly 8-day retreats. They have beginning retreats, they have advanced retreats, they have Mandarin retreats, they have Spanish-speaking retreats, and these are non-residential retreats where people can come in for 8 days and learn all the skills of blindness or, kind of have an introduction. They have monthly support groups in English, Spanish, and Mandarin. They have monthly, they call them community integration, which are basically kind of field trips for English, Spanish, Mandarin. They have quarterly family support groups, so it's pretty developed. But you live in many other places, even within California, and you're lucky if OIB comes to your house twice and shows you how to mark your oven. So if you're recently blind, that's not enough. I mean, if you just lost your sight, having somebody come over twice a year and sign you up for library services, I mean, that's not going to keep you off a nursing home. That's not going to really do what you need it to do. So, so it concerns us that VR services right now are tied so heavily to employment. So we are looking like, how can we make VR services available to people who do not have an employment goal? I often think about, for example, my sister-in-law. She's excited. She's about my age. She's got three kids. She's always been a stay-at-home parent. She's extremely active. She volunteers in her kids' classrooms like twice a week. She, you know, grades papers. She's soccer mom, room mom, does the whole thing. But if she were to lose her sight, she wouldn't decide that she wants to be an astrophysicist. She still wants to be a stay-at-home mom, and she still needs all the skills of blindness. How can she do what she does if she doesn't have mobility, if she doesn't have adaptive technology, if she doesn't have independent living skills? So, I mean, we know that the homemaker goal was abused, but we would love to find ways to bring it back with safeguards in place for people, so they're not just, that's not just the default thing for people who are blind. So some ideas that we have, I mean, we have quite a few, but I think the ones that might get the most traction are, you know, amending the WIOA regulations to bring back the homemaker goal for people who are above the age of 55. And that way, seniors could still receive comprehensive rehabilitation services, even if they didn't have a vocational goal. Now, I know for my husband, what would often happen is people would attend the OIB retreats. Like I said, they're 8 days, they're non-residential. And they would discover that, wow, I really like this mobility thing. Or, hey, you know what? I was afraid of computers, but now I think they're pretty cool, and I want to learn how to use email. Or, hey, I want to learn to use a iPhone. So after they went to, like, an OIB retreat, they said, you know what? I really want to take mobility, like take real mobility, or I want to take a real technology class. And so then they would attend the society, and they would sign up for mobility, or they would sign up for technology. And so kind of the OIB served as an introduction. And they could kind of say, you know what, I really love to cook. I would like to take home ec. And then they would go through rehab and actually sign up for home ec classes with a homemaker goal. So we would kind of like to see that being brought back for people above the age of 55. The other thing we'd like to consider is right now, Medicare and Medicaid do reimburse people, or do reimburse physical therapists, occupational therapists, and speech and language therapists. We would like to see them also reimburse people like for O&M instructors and daily living skills instructors. And our rationale behind that is, what is the goal? Well, several folds. What is the goal of physical therapy? Often it's to get people mobile, whether that's teaching them how to operate a wheelchair, teaching them how to operate crutches, teaching them, you know, it's focused on being ambulatory and getting around. And frankly, to a large extent, different mechanism, but same end goal, it's allowing people who are blind to get around the community effectively. So we see those purposes as really similar. Same with occupational therapy. Occupational therapy, the goal tends to be to help people with limited hand dexterity, other mobility limitations, to cook, to clean, to do activities of daily living. Though it's different techniques and different, you know, different tools, different strategies, different, you know, outcomes to an extent, daily living skills have a lot of the same goals as OT. And so, I mean, even with Braille, you know, speech and language therapy, one of the, you know, the main goals is often to help people learn to read, to help people with writing. And theoretically, that's what Braille does too. So we think if you can reimburse physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, why can't you reimburse O&M instructors? Because we want to do everything we can to kind of untie access to blindness rehabilitation services from VR. Because right now, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, but older people have no access to blindness rehabilitation other than OIB. And if you live in a state where OIB is not robust, you've got nothing. I mean, nothing. So
South Carolina's in that boat.
Yeah, and so it's really a new world, because it used to be that seniors had access to VR, and now they don't. So, you know, we are really interested in exploring how can we give seniors more access to blindness rehabilitation. So that is that piece. and I'll kind of move along. So I hope I'm Barbara or Robert, please stop me if you want me to focus on, you know, switch topics or move on. But so we also have a hospital study. We are working with Cabell Huntington Hospital in Huntington, West Virginia. Our goal is to study the experiences of patients who have vision loss and then put out materials, guidance materials for hospitals in how to most effectively serve and expand access and expand quality of care to patients with vision loss. And so we recently completed two focus groups with 16 people each of okay, the children are coming. As I said to some of you before the call started, I'm working from home and my kids are off school, so there will be two children that you hear in the background from time to time. So we're after the focus groups with the blind and low vision patients, we're also going to be doing focus groups with hospital staff members. And when this is finished, we want to put out material and disseminate material that helps hospitals, again, improve their quality of care to people who are blind and low vision. And our patients have, the average age of our patients, the mean age is 64 years old. So this is something that disproportionately affects people who are older. Although the patients in our focus groups have ranged in age from 29 to 81. And to give you kind of a broad overview of some of the main categories that the participants talked about is, first of all, communication. Patients requested doctors and other staff communicate with them directly rather than speaking to their companions. They asked that the staff to speak when they entered a room and, understand that they're capable of making their own decisions and they're capable of speaking for themselves. They asked that all staff from medical to housekeeping introduce themselves upon entering a room. Ask patients what accommodations the patient might need. It's generally more helpful to someone to ask what type of assistance the patient needs rather than what they can or cannot see. For example, asking, how can I help you get to your next destination? Or can you read this document? Or would you like me to read this for you? Rather than just saying, hey, how much can you see? Understanding the importance of a white cane and a guide dog and the patient's right to have access to those when they're patients in the hospital, unless, of course, there's, some sort of sterile environment. Assistance with completing paperwork in a, private and, secure way. So that's a lot of communication things that people touched on. And there was also, making sure that staff are aware how to do human guides, that they don't just, grab patients and kind of push them along. The importance of asking what kind of assistance do you need and not just assuming people need assistance. Needing resources for services such as where to perhaps board a guide dog if you're in the hospital. Transportation services that you might need, to get home, making sure that discharge paperwork is available in alternate format, such as large print, braille electronically. Because, often when you're discharged from the hospital, there's a laundry list of things you're supposed to do and not do and medications you're supposed to take and things you're supposed to stay away from. So making sure that that's accessible. People wanted, as I pointed out, assistance traveling within the hospital, and again, that's, human guide, access to signage, just making sure that people feel comfortable within their environments and are oriented to their rooms, are perhaps oriented to their hospital floor, so if they can walk around, if they're ambulatory and it's good for them to walk around, they have an idea of how the floor is laid out, where the nurse's station is, again, an orientation to their room, there's always that TV, that remote control that controls your bed and your TV and calls the nurse, so kind of making sure that they have an orientation to that so that they know when to push and when. So there's a lot of different things that we learned from the, the various people who were patients at Cabell Huntington Hospital. And once we're done, hold on one second, my son, okay, you guys can eat a little bit of Swedish fish. Don't eat any. She ate a lot. Okay, tell her she's not. Okay. All right. Working from home. Okay. So we really want to be, after we interview the staff,
We want to be able to interview the staff. And again,
Mom, can I play on your iPad?
You know what? Why don't you put on? Can you put on Mickey Mouse Club or Bubble Guppies or Paw Patrol for Joe Stink? Okay. Guys, I'm so sorry. Both of my kids are
That's all right. It's all right. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
What we're working with over here. So, hold on. Okay, if you turn on the TV for Josephine, then you can play with the iPad, okay?
Okay, Mom.
Okay.
Say, Miss State. Oh, Robert.
It's the best I can do right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, the whole point is to provide hospitals with, you know, videos, brochures, materials, present at conferences. We're going to figure out how to disseminate this material. Probably a lot of conferences that, you know, medical conferences that relate to, you know, older people, conferences that relate to blindness and low vision. So we really want to get this type of information to medical professionals so that it improves the experience of people who are blind when they're in the hospital. So any questions or
You get a grant to do this. How did you choose this hospital?
We chose this hospital because, so our main office is in Washington, D.C., but we do have a smaller satellite office in Huntington, West Virginia, and that's
right.
It's kind of a random location, but the office, the house that it's in was given to us, or the building that it's in was given to us, and like we own it, we don't pay taxes on it, it's free to us. So, and it's really become a part of that community, and so
it probably is also a typical environment, too, so that's a good thing.
Yes, exactly. So, they are, Huntington in general and the Tubert Foundation in Huntington are always very keen to work with us, so, you know, they approached us and they wanted, they wanted more advice on how to better serve people who are blind and low vision. And we said, okay, let's not just make this a staff training for them. How can we make this into a study that with the results, not just telling them what to do, but studying what patients want and then disseminating that information nationally. So finally, or maybe this isn't finally, but we're also beginning a research study on transportation for older adults with vision loss. We're applying for a study from the Retirement Research Foundation. And what we really want to study is divide people up into three groups. Older adults with vision loss, who don't drive, obviously. Older adults who do not have vision loss but have chosen not to drive for other reasons. And then older adults who do drive. And kind of studying what the differences in their experiences as far as their quality of life, their access to events in the community, their access to employment, to volunteering, to healthcare. So kind of really finding out, for older adults with vision loss who don't drive, to really tease out what parts of their experience are different simply because they don't drive. So comparing them with older adults who don't have vision loss but also choose not to drive, and then how their lives are different from folks who drive, who are their same age but drive, and kind of find out, like, what gaps there are so that we can then advocate for services to meet those gaps, just so that we're aware of what they are, so that we can target our advocacy towards that. We've just turned in the letter of intent, and we look forward to applying for that grant in May. And so when that happens, we will definitely be looking for lots of participants. And I hope we can come back to you guys, and hopefully you guys will be interested in participating, because we'll need lots of people in order to make this study as valid and informative as possible. So that's the AFB portion of the talk. So does anybody have any questions or comments?
One of the things I would like to say in the last study that you're doing should be some difference between people who lost their vision in later life as to those who have gotten old but have had their loss of vision for a long time.
What's that?
Yeah, thank you. Is there, I think think that the study has already been developed, so I think like the actual parameters of the study already exist, but that's definitely something, studying the differences in, quality of life and lifestyle between older people who've been blind their entire lives or blind most of their lives, and the difference between people who go blind later in life, I think that's definitely something I'll mention to the research department. I know it's a lot. It's kind of a lot of dense information.
That's very good. What's happening?
Very informative.
Yeah.
So how about the website? How about your website?
The website. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. How about it? So last in 2018, I won a Holman Prize, which is a prize that's put out annually by the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And it's given to three people who are blind who want to develop a project that kind of pushes people's expectations of blindness or that kind of expands people's perceptions of what blind people can do. And so what I wanted to do was to develop a website that people who are blind and low vision can use to ask one another about places that they go, to write reviews of places that they go from a blind and low vision perspective, to, just share information as blind travelers. My husband and I travel a lot, and we often use TripAdvisor and we use Cruise Critic. So before we go on a cruise, I'll do lots of research on Cruise Critic, identify the ship, identify the itinerary that we want to do, and then I'll go on the message boards and I might ask questions. But there are some questions that we have that other cruise goers really can't answer that really are only for other people who are blind. And the same with, we like to go to Mexico, and we were supposed to go again in May, although now I'm not sure whether that's going to happen or not, but my husband loves to fish, and so we often go on the Cruise Critic message boards, and my husband likes to find a local fisherman whose boat he can go on and fish while he's there, because he doesn't like the touristy group tours. He wants to get the real experience. So he likes to find a local fisherman in a panga boat who he can just go out with. And so we go on the TripAdvisor message boards, and he connects with other tourists, and he, gets names and information. And again, we're able to get a lot of information that way, but there are some questions we have that really only another blind person can answer. Or we might want to say, you might go to a resort and really want to, let's say, snorkel, or you really want to go whitewater rafting, or whatever the situation is. And when you get there, they give you grief about being blind. And so you've just spent all your time and all your money to get there when, they're discriminating against you. And depending on the country you're in, you might not have any recourse at all. I mean, there might be absolutely nothing you can do about it. And so perhaps you would have been better off going to a different resort where they would have had no problem with you whitewater rafting or snorkeling. So knowing from other blind people how their experiences have gone, we think is really useful. And not just when people travel far afield and abroad. I mean, just even going to local stadiums or local concert venues or local museums and finding out, hey, this museum really was accessible, or, hey, these are the parts of the museum that are listed as accessible, but they're actually not, or it's not really worth your time. Or if you do an adaptive ski program, all adaptive ski programs are not created equal. They all sound amazing on their websites, and some really challenge you and push you. And, some really have high expectations of you, and they push you, and they challenge you, and sometimes they treat you like you're in preschool. And there's no way to know, because the websites make them all sound amazing. So where can you go to give a review of, maybe an adaptive outdoor, organization that you've been a part of? So I started the Blind Travelers Network, and it's kind of got three main sections. The first one is a blog, and it's a blog from about seven different blind travelers who have different preferences, different ways of doing things. Some are guide dog users, some are cane travelers, some, want to get away to relax, some want adventure and authenticity, and some people... everybody kind of wants something else. Everybody has different things that they're comfortable with when traveling or not traveling. So I wanted to get a wide variety of perspectives. So that's under the blog section. And then we also have a message board section where people can ask and answer questions of one another, such as, hey, I'm going to such and such location. Has anybody else ever done this? What do you think? And then there's also review forms that you can fill out. So that you're basically giving a review of a destination like you might give on Yelp or TripAdvisor, but you're doing it from a low vision or blind perspective. So that's kind of what it does. And the website address is blindtravelersnetwork.org. And that traveler has one L, not two. I have since learned that in Canada and the United Kingdom, they spell traveler with two L's. But it's just
Yes, someone I think is on speakerphone and they need to mute themselves because there's an echo.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, they are good.
Whatever that was. Okay.
Thank you.
So it's www.blindtravelersnetwork.org. So it's blindtravelersnetwork.org. So the important thing to remember is that it's Blind Travelers Network. And then also it's not .com. That's the other big mistake people make when they're looking for it. So I would love to have you guys check it out. And feel free to use the site and to write reviews of places that you've been, comment on the blog. Signing up for the site is free. So we would love to have you check out the site.
How much...
Okay, does anybody have any questions, comments? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Robert. So then, Stacy, are you getting much participation, you know, people writing in on the website?
So we've only had the new website, the relaunched website, open for about a month or two. And it has been slower than I've hoped, and part of it is that, I mean, I work full-time and, you know, have two children, a husband, and especially now with having the kids home with me all day, I haven't been able to give it as much publicity as it deserves and needs. So I need to get better about that, so I'm really glad to be talking about this with you guys. The blog section is excellent. The review section continues to be, I mean, more and more people are leaving reviews. The message board, they're still a little quiet. I mean, there's some action, but, you know, it's still a new enough site that it still kind of needs, you know, exposure. And part of the thing, the important thing is it's not just a blog. It's not just, you know, my blog, my experiences. It's kind of a crowdsourcing site. So the more information people put on it, the more useful it will be. Because right now, I think people go to the site looking for information. But if none of us leave reviews of places we go, if none of us, you know, leave information about places that we know about, information is not then on the site. So, I mean, we kind of have to build the site we want. We kind of have to fill the site with information so that when we come looking for information, it's there. And so that when other people come looking for information, it's there. So, as people begin to use the site, I'm very interested in your feedback, things that would make the site more accessible, things that would make the site more user-friendly. Please feel free to let me know.
Yes. And I want to apologize to people. I left the room a little while ago, so I didn't catch that echo bit until I came back in. And about 2 seconds before I opened my mouth, someone else mentioned that someone has a speakerphone on, so set up again.
Okay.
All right. So, Stacy, just
Does anybody have any questions of Stacy?
So, one thing about the history of the AFB, American Foundation for the Blind, weren't they kind of the very, very first group that the government went to when they decided that we really need to have schools for the blind around the country? And didn't the AFB do some kind of assistance in helping schools for the blind to get started in many states?
And not necessarily, because schools for the blind began opening and proliferated around the country kind of at the end of the 19th century, so like in the late 1880s, 1850s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and ASB was founded in 1921, so we were a little bit later than most of the schools for the blind opened.
Okay.
Now, we did do a lot of, talking books, professional development materials, but what we kind of found, or what they kind of learned in, you know, earlier this decade, was that there was really no need for AFB to do these things anymore because they were being done more robustly by other agencies. I mean, when we started AFB, there was a real need for talking books. But now the National Library Service does that. Learning Ally does that. I mean, there's so many other agencies that are doing it extremely well, and that, you know, we didn't need to do that anymore. As far as professional development materials, we didn't need to do that before. There are other organizations that do that. Like, we may have done that in the past, but there wasn't a point in doing it now. So we really kind of honed in on what it is we want to do, and that really is research and policy. So right now we're kind of styling ourselves as more of a think tank than a service providing organization, where we research and then we use that research to develop policy. And also, we disseminate that research to other organizations like NFB so that you can use that research in your, you know, when you're crafting advocacy and you're crafting things that you want to get done, hopefully you can use our research to, you know, back it up.
This is Judy. Has anyone noticed how very like the NFB, AFB's big ad campaign is on TV?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's almost as if, I would guess that anyone watching those ads, if they didn't pay attention, would think they are watching whichever one they already knew about.
You know, I couldn't tell you that. I mean, I imagine that we use different, I'm not involved in, you know, our media and our...
Yeah.
Right. No, I know. I didn't think you were.
Right.
I would imagine that our two organizations use different, different contractors. So I couldn't tell you about that. I haven't seen the ones that NFB does, but...
I think AFB must be spending a whole lot more money than we've ever spent on ads, because you see it everywhere. And you can't be getting that for nothing anymore.
Could be, and I think some of it's donated as well.
Yeah, I just noticed a similarity in the
right.
philosophical content of the ad.
I'll have to watch for those. I haven't noticed.
I have noticed that, but I think people are being just in general a lot more aware of how they're advertising. You know, because not only are you advertising on TV or radio, but you're probably using that same in a different format, but on the internet, etc. So, I think a lot of organizations are re-examining or looking at their how they project themselves and what is it they really want to the public to know about them.
So, Ms. Stacy, when you came on, I'm not sure if I remember, you said that you are a member of the National Federation of the Blind here in Nebraska, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There you go. I don't know if you guys heard that or not. Okay.
That's great.
And her
her
husband...
I've heard of some of those things.
I was going to say, just her husband is also works for the Commission for the Blind. He's the center supervisor for our blindness training.
He's the training center director at the Commission for the Blind. So.
That is awesome. It's a good place to work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Shelley said that.
I hope that we can work and get this, because I think this initiative of... two things. One is getting the Medicaid to pay for services. I think that's crucial, because I don't think it'll happen any other way also. And I think that if the way the system is set up now for transportation, for paratransit, is very limiting. And if that can be changed, then that can make a great difference, not only for people work-related, but just as you say, quality of life. Because if you need to go to the bank or whatever, you know, and go to the dry cleaner, whatever errands you need, you have to take 2 or 3 days to do something that should really only take, you know, 1 day to do it. Or either you have to have enough and hire a driver and do your errands, you know, or some such thing. If you are lucky enough to have a driver to hire.
And a lot of people don't have the money. I mean, if you're really
living
thing.
Yes.
It can be really hard to hire a driver. And I mean, mm-hmm, it's exactly mm-hmm. what you said. I mean, it's difficult to, okay, you're going to go to the post office one day, and then you're going to go drop your dry cleaning off another day. And mm-hmm. and even when you drop off your dry cleaning, you want to sit at the dry cleaning store for 90
minutes. Right, right. Okay, are there any other questions or comments for Stacey?
I think it really was worthwhile hearing just kind of what the new emphasis, you might say, is, you know, for AFB, and just that you're centering a lot on issues dealing with aging and blindness. So that was really great to know all that.
Well, hopefully, if all the conventions, if the summer conventions are still able to be held, which, of course, we all hope they are, you know, I'd love the opportunity to attend your meeting, and if there's any information that I can present at your meeting, please let me know.
Okay, very good.
So this is Shelley Cobble. I thought it was very informative. I'm going to make sure that people at our end here in South Carolina really listen to this, because I've got a friend that helps out with our senior camp that works at our Commission for the Blind, and actually she is an OIB counselor. And she's very frustrated that there's just not more able to be done, you know, under the confines of the Commission for the Blind, so to speak. So I thought this was very informative. I appreciate your willingness to be with us.
And, you know, I really appreciate some of the stories that you guys, and some of the kind of anecdotes that you guys have told me today. Like, you know, I never even thought about the dry cleaning one, and I don't know if Robert or Ruth or who would be good for me to contact if I ever need any, you know, quotes or, you know, for the advocacy we do. I've gotten a lot from blind parents, like explaining
what you should
why.
Do. Robert is our guru for the post. We do have a senior listserv page, so if you want something posted, like I need whatever you might need, or this is what I'm doing, I'd like people to respond to this, send it to Robert.
Yeah, that would be great.
You know, do it that way.
Just need,
yeah.
Often we just need little quotes, like when we're trying mm-hmm, to drum up mm-hmm. sponsorship, and, you know, getting like, hey, you know, I want to be able to run these errands all at one time and not have to, you know, stand around the grocery store for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for...
Well, thank you for being on the call. We really appreciate it, and we'll hope that we'll... be collaborating more as time goes by.
That would be great.
And you're welcome to come to Rocky Bottom anytime you want to visit.
I would love to come to Rocky Bottom.
We'll make a way for it to happen.
That sounds good.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.